This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. While Cincinnati has a long and rich beer brewing history, it's not always been properly preserved and celebrated. Many historic breweries have been torn down. Many famous brewery names have long since been forgotten. However, there is a resurgence of local breweries underway, as well as a newfound appreciation for the city's brewing history. And there are plans to create a brewing heritage trail to tell the story of the people and places that contributed to Cincinnati's brewing industry. Joining us to discuss the brewing heritage trail are Steve Hampton, Executive Director of the Brewery District Community Urban Redevelopment Corporation, and Mike Morgan, Founder and President of Queen City History and Education and curator of the Brewing Heritage Trail. If you have any stories, memories, ties to old Cincinnati breweries, give us a call at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Steve and Mike, good to see both of you this afternoon. Thanks
you
for
too.
Being
good
here.
Afternoon.
Steve, start us off by telling us, how did the idea for this come about? Were you having beer one night, having a drink? And wait a minute, this would be a great idea.
All of our planning sessions include beer. But no, this actually came out of our 2011 master plan, our strategic plan for the neighborhood, as an initiative that could help with the economic redevelopment of the neighborhood, along with other traditional development tools. But to truly celebrate the heritage in a permanent way, much like, you know, Boston with the Freedom Trail and other heritage trails across the country, or elements like the Bourbon Trail in Kentucky, we have this amazing heritage. So we thought, you know, we've been using it for years to bring people to the neighborhood. Let's really celebrate that and use it as a tool to share those stories and have some fun with it.
But the original idea was economic revitalization and economic development.
Yes.
Steve, Mike, what were the peak brewing years in Cincinnati? When was the beer industry at its best and its biggest here?
Really right about around the turn of the century. We had a real explosion of beer production in the 1850s. And that's continued to increase until you get into the early 1900s, and then Prohibition started to take a hold in different places, local option laws, and some of the production started to slack off. So early 1900s was really the peak.
How much beer was being produced at that time?
We were producing over 1,300,000 barrels of beer a year here.
Were we consuming all of that as well?
We were actually consuming that year being 1900, and in that year we were actually consuming 70% of all of that beer locally. So that comes out to over 52 gallons per man, woman, and child. And that was a lot of beer.
That is. What about the importance of lager? What was the importance of that to early production?
That's really why we had such an explosion of beer here in the 1850s. It's kind of a matter of a controversy of who made the first lager in Cincinnati. But we know that somebody was making it, and probably a couple different breweries, by the late 1840s. And as a result of that, we enter the 1850s with about 8 breweries here locally. And by the end of the 1850s, we have 36 of them. So lager really drove that change.
And what is lager, by the way, Mike?
Well, lager was all the beer that's been made in history up until that point, all used an ale yeast. And so that meant, among other things, that it was made at room temperature. And most of the earlier styles were, you know, most comparable today of what we drink in a porter or, you know, English bitters. And lager enabled the Germans originally to make a much lighter, crisper beer. You know, it kind of turns into, at its kind of finest, it's those really good German pilsners. And so it's a lighter beer and it's a crisper beer. It's a beer that's just a lot more appealing on a really hot summer day than a heavy porter is.
Or if you're drinking 52 gallons of beer a year.
Right. Or if you're drinking all through the workday, which people did. So, you know, it made beer a lot more popular of a beverage than it had been before. And Americans actually started to drink less liquor and more beer. And we drank a whole lot of it here.
Mike, what is the as far as the number of breweries that Cincinnati had during the brewing industry's heyday, how many did we have?
The most that we had in 1 year was 36, but some of those were relatively small. So after that, you know, the sheer number of them starts to decline, but production continues to increase because the big ones that succeeded kept getting much bigger and bigger. we had pretty routinely between about a dozen to 14 breweries in the in over the Rhine and those neighborhoods immediately adjacent to it throughout most of the 1800s. And roughly, you know, a couple of dozen regionally throughout most of the 1800s, early 1900s.
How did the breweries then in size compare to the breweries that we have now?
Well, a lot of them were very comparable, actually, to some of our bigger craft breweries. So, you know, they weren't really big. A lot of them were producing, you know, about 30,000 gallons of beer a year, which I think is the capacity now of Rheingeist, Moorlein, and Madtree. I think they're all doing about that level of capacity. But back then, you know, there were a couple of big exceptions to that, and the Christian Moorlein Brewery was the fifth largest in the United States. So those guys were making a lot of beer. And Wendisch Mühlhauser was not too far behind them. So we had a couple that were really big, but a lot of those breweries were really kind of comparable to the bigger craft brands that we have today. So those craft brands today, I mean, it's nice that we're really kind of bringing back the way we drank in the 19th century. Not necessarily as much.
Not 1.3 million barrels, though. Or well, that was gallons, wasn't it? Not barrels.
That was barrels. So that's
that
a massive
barrels.
Amount of.
My gosh. Yeah. Because a barrel is what, about 50, 55 gallons roughly?
36, is that?
I should know that. Yeah, somewhere around there.
Okay, so. I'm thinking bourbon-sized barrels. You're talking beer-sized barrels here.
Yeah, beer's a little smaller than a bourbon barrel.
Yeah. Steve, what's the route going to be for the Heritage Trail?
Well, it extends through the biggest core of that brewing heritage. As Mike mentioned, we had these dozens of breweries, and most of them were located in the Brewery District, which is over the Rhine, the West End, north of Liberty Street. But this trail will extend through Pendleton, up Main Street, really telling some of the early stories, those earliest English, Irish, and French brewers before lager beer, telling some of the culture with the churches and the schools, up crossing Liberty Street, up McMicken, as we get in the kind of the heart of the brewery district, up Vine Street, telling those stories of the saloons and beer gardens, and then past Finley Market, up West McMicken to where we had these big massive breweries, the Moorlines and some of these other ones. So it really kind of follows the not only the narrative of that story, but again, hits the biggest concentration of where these breweries were. As Mike mentioned, these were multiple different size kind of breweries. And what's really amazing is that all these were, you know, smack dab in the middle of a true mixed-use neighborhood where 44,000 people just in over the Rhine lived. You know, they lived, worked, and played there. Everything happened there. So, you know, there was a brewery next to a school, next to a bakery, next to a church, and where, you know, thousands of people lived. And so it wasn't set off somewhere else. It was all an integral part of the neighborhood. And so that's a really unique thing that we don't see too much anymore. We have what we believe is the biggest collection of pre-Prohibition brewery architecture in the country, all distributed in the middle of this, you know, these amazing neighborhoods.
513-419-7100 to join us. And you're using a lot of technology to tell these stories too, aren't you? Can you tell us about some of that?
Yeah, so we have the traditional, you know, signage and wayfinding that's permanently there that tells you that story that you can kind of stumble across any time. But one of the things we're really excited about is using the technology that everybody carries in their pocket with a smartphone. So there's going to be a smartphone app, a free smartphone app that is actually going to be launched this fall at the Beer Baron Ball that will, you know, tell you stories, guide you along the trail, give you audio stories that we can have this constantly new content and telling different stories along that same trail. It's also going to have this amazing digital interactive component. So you can stand on the street, literally x-ray under the cellar, see brewery buildings recreated where they've been torn down, or, you know, x-ray into a building and see how the brewing process worked. Really unlocking a whole nother level of the storytelling and history that we have here in a way that's really never been done, you know, anywhere in the country yet.
So how did you go about reconstructing these sites in the digital world? I mean, how much research is going into doing all this?
There's a lot of research. Mike can touch on it more, but, you know, there's a lot of different sources. There's, you know, there's Sanborn Fire Insurance Map. Sometimes we have blueprints. Sometimes we have descriptions. Sometimes these buildings, they're cellars that still remain underneath where they've knocked down the building. So we're able to do some physical documentation. We've been doing 3D laser scanning to be able to capture these spaces. So it's a mix of all of that. And, you know, some of it is we've got photos or old advertising images. Some of these very small early breweries, we're really kind of extrapolating. We know what they probably look like, but, you know, we just don't have the historic information. So it's a real range of information that we have and sources that we have, but it is really fun digging through that and, you know, again, rediscovering something that's been lost.
Mike?
And land records have been really beneficial with that. You know, every now and then I will run across a lease that is very descriptive about what that building looked like and how it functioned and what went on in it. And mechanics liens as well. When you didn't pay your contractors got very detailed about the work they'd done and where it was and what it looked like. And so that's been really beneficial where we have no visual record left at all.
And getting back to the history, Mike, how many breweries stayed in operation during Prohibition, and which breweries were the first to get up and running after Prohibition?
Well, Brockman was the only one that actually managed to survive and make it through fully functional the whole time. But we had a lot of them that started back up right after Prohibition, and Hootapole was the one that wound up, you know, becoming most successful. And we had a couple of breweries that started in former brewery spaces. The Red Top Brewery was in what used to be the John Houck Brewery pre-Prohibition. And, you know, Shane Lane was a brand new brewery that started in the 30s. And the Vendish Mulhauser Lion Brewery became the Burger Brewery. The Jackson Brewery became the Jackson Brewery again for a while. So actually, there were so many breweries that reopened under new management or partially the same management that by the time we hit about late 1930s, early 1940s, we were producing more beer here than we were pre-Prohibition. And we had really brought back a lot of that brewing culture, but then we lost it.
How big a part of Cincinnati's economy was the beer brewing industry in its best days?
It was big, and it's difficult. We've tried to quantify that a few times, and it's a hard thing to do, in part because the breweries, because they were competitive, they didn't provide a lot of accurate statistics. But, you know, there was roughly turn of the century, there was easily a couple of thousand people directly employed by breweries. And then beyond that, you had hundreds of people that were employed making malt. There were a lot of people in the ice business. There were one of the largest cooperages in the United States, the largest in the United States, was here in the greater Cincinnati area. So making beer barrels and malt and all of it.
And the tens of thousands of people who worked in all those beer gardens and saloons, right, and resorts serving that beer, you know. So that ancillary industry that wouldn't have existed without it was amazingly huge. You know, we had thousands of saloons at one point in the city, so...
Yeah, I mean, I estimated at some point, and it's an educated guess, but it's just a guess. But I think that at the peak, there were probably close to, you know, 20-30% of the people employed in this city were directly or indirectly drawing all or part of their income from the production of beer. It was big.
We will continue our conversation. You can join us at 513-419-7100 with your questions and comments. Maybe you've got some stories, maybe you had a grandparent or a great-grandparent who worked in the brewery industry. 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Joining me this afternoon to discuss the Brewing Heritage Trail are Steve Hampton, Executive Director of the Brewery District Community Urban Redevelopment Corporation, and Mike Morgan, who's founder and president of Queen City History and Education and curator of the Brewing Heritage Trail. You can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. So, Steve, what stories are encompassed in this one commodity? I mean, what you're telling me sounds like this is vast.
It is. You know, the story of beer is really the story of Cincinnati, and it's not just the, you know, how much beer we made, how much beer we drank. It was integral to really every aspect of the city's history and culture and politics. And so those are all those stories that we're going to be telling along the trail. You know, one of the great things that we can do is, you know, with the digital technology of the app and having all these stories is walk along the same route, and you can tell – really an infinite number of stories. You can talk about, you know, the beer baron. You can talk about the story from the brewery worker standpoint. You can talk about it from the temperance advocate. There's just everything really was related to beer in one way or another back in the day.
Who are some of the more interesting characters, Mike, in the beer industry in Cincinnati?
That's a great question, because there was a lot of very interesting characters. And, you know, you've got stories that are kind of that very positive, stereotypical story. Those guys like, you know, Christian Moorline and, you know, Vindish and Mulhauser and John Houck. And they're people that came here. They didn't have a whole lot of resources. They worked hard. They built these fantastic breweries. And so those are nice stories. But really, because I'm a little bit twisted, I prefer the darker ones. And we found a lot of those. And, you know, particularly kind of the second generation of a lot of these big brewers, the sons had a habit of behaving badly.
Okay.
And had a lot of attempted murders and just a lot of, shootouts in breweries and crazy stuff.
Some good scandalous behavior, if you like that kind of thing.
Great scandalous behavior.
Yeah.
Again, 513-419-7100 to join us. Mike, what were some of the aspects of beer history that you've gotten a better understanding of as you've done research for this project?
I got a much better understanding of the ways that beer really influenced so much of the culture, particularly in terms of the legal system, the court system, the general attitudes towards the law. And brewing, you know, it did a lot of very positive things for this city, employed a lot of people. And, you know, Cincinnati beer was renowned around the world. But there was a downside to it. And, you know, that was that brewers helped make saloons way more prolific than they should have been. And, you know, we wound up with over 2,000 saloons in this city in the late 1800s.
Were they legal saloons?
They were not legal saloons.
Okay.
So the state of Ohio in 1851, temperance advocates thought that if they could amend the state constitution and prohibit the ability to create liquor licenses, then that was going to be the first step towards prohibition statewide. What happened instead was that there was no legal way to license a bar, but the law overreached so far that it was just completely ignored. So when that change in the Constitution was made in 1851, we had about 400 bars in the city, which was still a lot. These days, I think we have something somewhere between 200 and 250 full liquor licenses in modern Cincinnati. We had about 400 when that change in the law was made. By 1886, we had 3,400 some places to buy a drink by the glass, and every single one of those establishments was operating in violation of the law. And so when you think about that, you know, the effect is it creates a lot of opportunity for graft and corruption.
All kinds of misbehavior.
The police are in the bars, you know, drinking, and it's we were not necessarily a well-run city.
and is this why modern liquor law says that breweries can no longer control a bar or a saloon?
It absolutely does. It's direct kind of cause and effect. In 1912, they finally changed the law, and they prohibited bars from being able to own or prohibited breweries from being able to own bars or control bars the way that they used to in the 1800s. And that change is still with us today. So you can go to a brewery's tap room, but you're never going to go to a bar owned by a brewery, because the brewers really made a mess of that.
513-419-7100, and let's talk with Richard in Fort Wright. Hi, Richard.
Hello.
Go right ahead.
Yes, I was just wondering, I have not heard the importance of Northern Kentucky, specifically Bavarian and Wiedemann mentioned so far, and I know the brewing industry was extremely important to Northern Kentucky.
It certainly was. The biggest concentration was in Cincinnati and in the historic brewery district. But when we talk about all those breweries in this area, those big breweries in northern Kentucky were a big part of that production as well. So it was really the region, again, the heart of it that's unfortunately, mostly still remaining, other than the Bavarian brewery, is mostly all in over the Rhine primarily. But certainly northern Kentucky and Cincinnati had that was all tied together in that history.
Yeah. Got any plans for doing a brewing heritage trail in northern Kentucky, maybe?
Right now, our focus is getting this one off the ground in Cincinnati, but time will tell. So,
will you mention any of the history of Northern Kentucky breweries, though, in the Cincinnati version?
There'll be parts of it. A lot of it's very site specific. And again, what we can do with the technology is have those stories that we can tell. So you're very limited on what you can put on a physical sign. That's going to be a very very simple, basic story. We can tell so many of these stories with that digital technology and tell those stories of other places, even while we're walking along in Cincinnati. So that will certainly be part of it at some point.
So you've been relying on people to supply records, photos, documents to help you put together these digital reconstructions. You had an event recently at the library in conjunction with the library. How did that turn out? Did you get a lot of interesting material?
We did. It was a great partnership with the library called Digital Brew. There's some great images and resources out there, but we know because so many Cincinnatians, as Mike was talking about, were part of this industry, we know there's so many pieces and bits and pieces and lurking in people's attics and their family histories and photos and snapshots and various things that are back there. And so we've really been trying to bring those to light to be able to, not only analyze those for historic research, but hopefully share those along the trail. And I don't know, Mike, you want to talk about some of the cool things we found?
Number one, I was pretty impressed with just the number of people that came. But, just in that day, we saw beer brands that I'd never heard of that it even existed. We learned what some of these breweries were doing during Prohibition a little more, which is a really fuzzy topic, and got to see some fantastic candid shots in saloons of like old family bars. It was a pretty broad collection of things, and that's what we were looking for.
Are you still looking for photos and records and other information?
We are, absolutely.
How can people contact you about that?
The best is go to our website or send us an email at info@otrbrewerydistrict.org. But if you also search for the library site, there's a page there. But find either one of us, and we'll get in touch and make sure we scan those and preserve those for posterity.
And we've got a link to that at wvxu.org. So you're not just looking, just to be clear, you're not just looking for saloon photos, brewery photos, that kind of, you're looking for anything that can help you reconstruct over the Rhine in that part of town. Right.
And whether it's from a physical document of photos or drawings, or is it, letterhead, is it, invoices or records from the company? Again, there's so much information we don't have. And so any of those pieces really fill in a lot of the gaps and help us connect the dots. So, it may just be a photo you have. It may just be a random piece of, company files. But that could be something very important that helps us connect those dots and really fill in those gaps.
And it goes beyond that. Photos of the interior of Over the Rhine are shockingly hard to find. So one of the things that we envision doing with this trail is being able to recreate entire streetscapes. And so we need a physical record of that. So it doesn't even have to be, drinking related. If you have a picture of your family's bakery that has a good, intact streetscape behind it, we want that as well.
So what's the timeline for getting this open? Where do things stand now, and what's the timeline?
So we've been able to raise a good number of funds. We've had support from the city and the state of Ohio. And so the digital trail, the smartphone app and the websites are actually going to launch this fall, October 22nd at the Beer Baron Ball. And the first segment of the actual physical trail will start construction early next spring. And so we've got the funding in place to build the first of three segments of this trail, of that initial route that extends, through Pendleton all the way past Findlay Market, about a 2.3-mile route. The first segment's going to go to construction early next year. And so we're really moving along with this.
So I have to ask, Cincinnati's been known as Porkopolis in the past, so do you think maybe it should be known as Beeropolis now, based on what you're seeing out there?
You know, the nickname Cincinnati was really almost the equivalent of that. It was German, but it really spoke to the fact that we were pretty drunk.
What are we seeing today in terms of a renewal of Cincinnati's beer industry?
It's obviously a growing industry, and it's fascinating to see. It's really great to see that range of breweries, as Mike talked about. You know, there's the big breweries, the Moorlines and the Rheingeist and the Mad Trees, but you also have the neighborhood breweries, really kind of harkening back to that tradition of the neighborhood saloon or the small little brewery that really just served its beer in the city. And so it's great to see that range of breweries come back and to be able to, you know, walk along this Brewing Heritage Trail, see the history, and enjoy a nice, great local beer as you're doing that. It's a pretty great thing.
Well, Steve and Mike, thanks for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you.
Steve Hampton, Executive Director of the Brewery District Community Urban Redevelopment Corporation, and Mike Morgan, Founder and President of Queen City History and Education and Curator of the Brewing Heritage Trail.